a Saturday morning to you, everybody. Welcome to the Catholic Cemeteries Association radio show. Along with Chris Radlitz, Director of Family Services for the CCA, I am Gary Byron. Hey, what's going on there, brother? How are you?
Hey, good morning to you, Gary. Life is good. Everything is great. Yeah, no problems. How about you?
No problems here now. Well, I mean, look, we all have our problems, but hopefully nothing that's so insurmountable, you know.
You survived your one-day fast last week?
I did. I did survive it. But you know what? Oh, wait, so last Sunday, I watched the Daytona 500. The week before was the Super Bowl. And you know, I'm so glad I kept you in mind of when you said that you are allowed to deviate from your fasting, you know, from your on Sunday, you know, because I had a hodgepodge of crap food that I probably shouldn't have eaten, but there goes all the good work I had done during the week.
Well, generally can't blow it all in one day.
No, that's true. There's probably some things I ate that I probably shouldn't have, but whatever. What are you gonna
do? Yeah. Hey, we all deserve it once in a while.
What did you give up for Lent, by the way?
I told you, I don't ever give anything up for Lent, really. I shouldn't say that. Processed sugar.
Oh, that's tough.
So anything that contains processed sugar, I will stay away from.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of baked goods, you know. I mean,
yep.
Yeah. Pies,
basically,
cookies,
that means brownies. No carbs.
Oh, yeah. Pastas, right? You can eat pasta. Processed sugar
no,
in pasta?
No, not really.
Oh. It's all,
so
yeah.
I don't put
starch?
Anything in the coffee. I don't, yeah.
Well, the coffee isn't processed sugar. That's more granular sugar, right?
No, it still doesn't matter. How do you think it became granular? It's processed. Mm.
That's tough, man. Whew. I give you credit. How are you sticking? I mean, we're not even that far into Lent. You know, we're only a few days. But, I mean, you stuck to it so far? Or?
Yeah. Well, okay. I'll stick with it.
Right.
I've done it before.
I know you have. In fact, I think you gave that up last year. Now, once you said it, I was like, oh, yeah, I think that you did that. If you didn't do it last year, you did it. Maybe the year before. I remember you giving that up.
I think that one was the year before.
Okay.
Yeah. But listen, to me, Lent to me is more about deepening your relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's a time where, I know for me, I stop and think, and I try to do this, you know, really intently. Stop and think and say, okay, what could have you done better?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
How could you be a better husband? How could you be a better father? What things should have you done? And then some of that means, you know, more patience with people, looking out for their better interests, you know, putting other people first or at least farther ahead than they may have been in your mind in the past. And really, for me, it's trying to really get into some intense praying over this 40 days. Just as an opportunity to try and get closer to God and try and understand what he wants for me in my life.
You know, putting others first and treating others the way that you would want to be treated is actually something I take pride in doing year-round. The one that I have a hard time with is patience. Man, oh, man. I can admit this. I admit this freely. They say patience is a virtue. You know, I wish I had more patience. I really do. If there's something I could change about myself, it would be, and not that I can't. I mean, we could all make changes of ourselves. I find that to be the most difficult. Patience. I lose my patience. Not my temper. I don't lose my temper, but I sometimes lose my patience with things.
Yeah, and I'll tell you a little story. There was a time a number of years ago where I was really upset with myself because I felt like my level of patience had just dropped off the charts. I mean, I had like zero patience for anybody and anything. And I used to get on my knees and keep praying, Lord, give me patience. Lord, give me patience. And all that would happen is it'd get worse and worse and worse. So one day I'm actually in confession. And I finally just had it because I was impatient.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I've been praying to God for I don't know how long for him to give me patience. And it just gets worse and worse. He goes, really? And why do you think that is? Well, that's why I'm asking you. You're the priest, not me. He goes, you're an idiot. I go, what? He says, you're an idiot. I go, well, what does that mean? He said, look, you pray for patience. So how do you get more patience? God gives you opportunities in abundance to practice it. And if you don't, you don't get it. And I just sat there, like, stupefied. So all these things that are making me even more impatient are the test to try and practice patience.
Right.
Yup, now you got it. I'm like, huh. So when it comes down to it, no matter what I'm praying for, it's all on me. He goes, yep, you got it again.
But didn't you kind of know that, Chris?
Well, I think we all kind of know that. But, you know, sometimes we look for divine help and guidance to make things easier. And the fact is, you know what? That's not the way it works.
Yeah.
You got to, each of us has to step up, you know? And ever since that time, I've realized, okay, so now when I see this situation arise where, you know, in the past my patience would be short-lived, I make a real effort to not do what I used to do. So consequently, I've gained patience, actually, quite a bit of it.
Hmm.
Because the more you do it, you know, the easier it is. It's kind of like going to confession. You know, people always complain, oh, confession, I need to go to confession, blah, 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 blah. But you know what? I love going to confession.
I know
because
you do.
The more I go, the less I sin. It's just how it is. I mean, if only for the fact that I don't want to seem like an idiot coming in every week saying the same stupid thing over and over and over. You know, so at some point you finally just smack yourself and say, hey, here's a clue. Don't do it. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Do you think confession is the absolute least, I guess, endeavor that Catholics engage in or partake in?
I think that people don't understand the value and the grace of the sacrament. People try and they humanize it, and they forget that it's a supernatural experience. So they say, well, I don't need to go to a priest to confess my sins. Yes, you do, actually, because the priest is there as the representative of Jesus Christ. It's not you talking directly to Jesus, because that's not the way it's set up. And why do we have to do it the way it's set up? Because Christ told us, what he told Peter, you are the rock. Upon this rock I will build my church. What you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. What you bound on earth will be bound in heaven. Well, guess what? That's what was bound on earth. And that's what we have to do. And again, there's a great grace that comes from it. Mm-hmm. And that grace, that self-realization, you know, where you humble yourself as a human to profess your inadequacy. And that's actually a wonderfully spiritual thing to do. And then comes the biggest benefit of all. God's forgiving you.
Right.
And there's not a time that I don't walk out of confession feeling like $1 million. Although I'm always looking in the sky for that lightning bolt because I figure, you know, okay, this is the moment where I have no sin. You know, he'll probably take me right now just to save me from a life from damnation. But nonetheless. So, yeah, to me.
Okay.
It's the most underrated and most important sacrament we have.
But yet, the least that Catholics partake in. I know a lot of Catholics that just don't go to confession. They go to communion,
they go to Mass every week.
Look
what it's come down to. I mean, you know, confession, Saturday from 3 to 4.
Yeah, one day a week for 1 hour.
I'm going to tell you something. I won't name the parish, but there's a parish where I live now, my parish, that when you go to Saturday confession, you'll be there 3 hours. That's how many people are there. Place is packed. It's like you're going to Mass. It's packed.
Wow.
And, yeah, there's three priests doing confession at the same time. And, yep, it's a beautiful thing to see. It really is.
There's a few things I want to go over with you on today's show, but first, I'll just... some real quick housekeeping issues before we get into our program today. If you can just tell everybody very quickly about the scheduled DOLs, and I know you got a special offer that the CCA is offering to the families of the Archdiocese.
Yeah, so since the first day of Lent, Ash Wednesday, through the 31st of March, we have a special for families of the Archdiocese that if they come to any of our cemeteries and purchase a tandem mausoleum crypt, they can save $750. If they purchase a single mausoleum crypt, they can save $500. And if they purchase two graves, they can save $150. So that's kind of a nice Lenten, I guess, special to give to families to help them through their times. Hmm. Also, Dignity of Life seminars, right now we've got over 17 of them booked. They start March 1st and run through October 24th, with more being added every week. So really, it's best to check the website at www.ccacemlikemary.org and see where the one is that's most convenient for you. The very first one that's coming up, though, is Wednesday, March 1st, 2 p.m., St. Margaret Mary Church in South Windsor.
All right. That's the first one.
Yeah.
All right.
Excited about that.
As you should be. So listen, last week, we were discussing, obviously, Ash Wednesday. Big times. It's an important day for Catholics in the Roman Church, Roman Catholic Church. It's the first day of the Lenten season. Okay, so that's kind of where I wanted to begin. And I'm sorry, forgive me in advance for maybe asking what you may consider a stupid question, but what is the Lenten season? What does that mean?
Well, Lent lasts 46 days. It's 46 days. The first day of Lent begins 46 days before Easter, okay?
Right. Yep.
And the reason they say 40 days is because during Lent we don't count Sundays as being part of the Lenten penitential part of our Lenten observance. So if you're giving something up, you don't have to give it up on Sundays, which I think we mentioned this last time. You know, whatever. Right. I kind of just go with the flow. So if I'm already giving something up, I'm sure as heck not going to tempt myself to come back and not, you know, give it up again. So I'll just stick with giving it up. But Lent in itself, the three traditional pillars of Lent are prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. Christians honor the 40 days and nights following Christ's baptism when he went into the wilderness without water and food and was tempted by Satan. During that time, Christ did what we do today when we fast, wrestle with temptation. This was not the first fast. Biblical figures often fasted when petitioning God for something important. But Lent is traditionally known to be 40 days in duration, and it is to signify or resemble the 40 days and 40 nights fast of Jesus in the desert. The official beginning of Lent is Ash Wednesday. The official end of Lent, The true end of Lent is on Saturday, April 8th, Holy Saturday. But many people tend to look at Maundy Thursday, which is Thursday before Easter, as being the end. But from church standpoint, it's truly Saturday.
I thought it was Easter Sunday itself, actually.
You what?
I thought we thought it ended on Easter Sunday.
No, it actually ends on Saturday. The April 8th, the vigil at the vigil mass, because what's called the Paschal fast is supposed to be Good Friday, and Good Friday you don't eat, and that it carries into Holy Saturday until the mass in the evening at night. The Paschal, I just said what it was. I forgot the name.
All right. Well,
what Saturday? The
Holy Holy Saturday.
The vigil mass on Saturday, yeah.
Okay. Okay, but what's the part I'm not getting? And I remember you saying that last week. Maybe I should put it this way: what do we as Christians? What do we do during Lent?
Well, we talk about prayer, fasting, almsgiving. Those are the three pillars. Okay.
Got that.
So prayer accompanies fasting as a historic tradition of Lent. We should pray to improve our communion with God, strengthen our spiritual discipline, especially during this preparation of Easter Sunday, because this Easter Sunday is where Christ rose from the dead. I mean, that is, without Easter, without him rising, our faith is meaningless. So during this preparation period, we try and pray as well as fast and give alms to help us in our strengthening of our spiritual discipline. Fasting, also a well-known aspect of Lent, inspired by the fast of Jesus, spending 40 days in the wilderness, you know, we partake in fasting to increase our self-control over worldly desires, such as food. Ash Wednesday and Good Friday are obligatory days of fasting. In addition, Fridays during Lent are obligatory days of abstinence, meaning we don't necessarily fast, but we abstain from something, and in this case, it's meat.
Okay.
For members of the Latin Catholic Church, meaning us, the Roman Catholic Church,
right,
the norms on fasting are obligatory from age 18 until 59. So when you're fasting, a person is permitted to eat one full meal, as well as two smaller meals that together are not equal to a fuller meal or a full meal.
Okay.
The norms that are about abstinence are abstinence from meat during the Fridays, especially Fridays during Lent. And then almsgiving. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Continue. I was going to ask you another question, but no, go ahead.
Yeah, so in almsgiving, obviously, we're trying to help others. And that's a tradition of Lent. And it's inspired by the command of Jesus to love your neighbor as yourself. So while we should always be giving to others in love throughout the entire year,
mm-hmm.
we try to make an extra emphasis during Lent to try and be more loving and kind to others. And that doesn't mean when you're giving that you're giving money or that you're giving some material good. It just as well could be giving of your time, giving of your love, giving of the way you view people. So it's a great, I think it's an important part of what the three pillars of Lent are about.
And I imagine there are rewards for participating in Lent. You mentioned how great you feel when you come out of confession. But what are some of the rewards of participating in Lent?
I think it goes back to that greater intimacy with God.
Okay.
You know, because when you sacrifice, that's your reward for sacrifice. Because you're more in communion with Him rather than something else that you're partaking of. His love and one's salvation are not reliant on denying oneself chocolate or beer, okay? But creating a closer relationship is something that is part of what our salvation is. These 40 days are set aside to praise and worship God, to read the Bible more, to pray more often. You know, we observe Lent correctly to anticipate this deeper intimacy with the Lord, and that is the blessing. So we do not expect rewards such as more favorable answers to prayer or resolution of health concerns. It's all about, although there's been some of that reported, it's all about the experience of this closeness and intimacy that we're trying to achieve during this time frame. That's the real reward of participating in Lent.
Folks, you are listening to the Catholic Cemeteries Association radio show along with Chris Radlitz, Director of Family Services. I'm Gary Byron. I want to give you enough time for this question. It's kind of, I don't know if it's complex or as much as it's detailed or detail oriented. But I'll give you until the final minute of the show. We've talked about colors, right, that are used in the church to describe events and traditions. I know we've talked about it more than once in the past. But when it comes to Lent, Chris, what are some of the colors of Lent?
Well, I think, you know, the one color that's always associated with Lent is purple, okay?
Right. I got that.
Because, you know, yep. During his passion, so from Holy Thursday through Easter Sunday, everything is covered in the church with purple. During the Lenten season, the priests are wearing purple when they celebrate Mass. And the reason for that is purple symbolizes repentance as well as the royalty of Christ as King of all kings.
Hmm.
You know, before Jesus was crucified, they dressed him in a purple robe and they placed a crown of thorns on his head, okay? And the purple color was deliberate as Jesus was being accused of declaring himself king of the Jews. And the inscription, I-N-R-I, which is often seen above Jesus on crucifixes, means Jesus Christ, King of the Jews. The reason it's I-N-R-I is that in Hebrew, Jesus, J, is actually, all J's are I. So it's Jesus Nazarenus Rex Judaorum. So
that was good.
Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. And that's where the I-N-R-I stands for.
They wanted to have that removed when he was crucified, didn't they?
Well, it was actually Pontius Pilate that wrote that on the wooden sign that they took and nailed to the cross above Jesus' head. That's called the Titulus Crucis, or the title of the cross. And the funny thing, it was actually discovered in 1492 at the Basilica of Santa Croce in Jerusalem, which means the Holy Cross in Jerusalem, which interestingly was the private chapel that Helena, the mother of Constantine the Great, had built for herself to house the true cross, which is widely believed that she recovered from its location. So she, everybody seems to think that Helena went on this journey because her son was, you know, basically the head of the free world at the time, Constantine the Great. She went on this path to try and find a true cross, evidently found it and had this big chapel built. Mm-hmm. And they actually found the board that was nailed above his head that says I-N-R-I in this basilica. So anyway, that's just another aside from this. But purple dye was a very precious commodity, and it was painstakingly manufactured. Because of the laborious process to try and extract purple dye, purple cloth was very expensive and only worn by royalty and nobility, because they were only the people that could afford it. Uh-huh. So kings and emperors would dress entirely in purple to emphasize their wealth and power.
Maybe that's why purple's my favorite color.
There it is, see? So therefore, dressing Christ in a purple robe was a symbolic act. Even if it intended to disrespect him, it was symbolic. So when we see the purple color, we're reminded that we too have disrespected Christ through our sins, and we're called to repent and ask forgiveness. As we enter the Lenten season, you'll see that the vestments and other cloths used for the Mass change to the color purple. Now, the shade of purple, there's actually two shades of purple in the church. The shade of purple for Lent is kind of a little reddish in its tone, as opposed to the blue tint purple for Advent. And this serves to remind us of the blood of Christ that was shed for us. Now, another color is black, because the ashes that sign us on Ash Wednesday are black and made by burning of old dried palms from last year's Palm Sunday, right? Well, black is a traditional color of both mourning and repentance. During Lent, some churches decorate with dried brown branches, and these symbolize a waiting period as we look forward to new life of Easter. Because when you look at the trees and the brown branches before spring is actually sprung, it's anticipation. The anticipation of new growth, new beginning. And the readings during this time are filled with this. So during the reading, the first Sunday of Lent, we hear about the 40 days of fasting in a dust-filled desert, which is where Satan tempted him, and he turned stones into rich brown bread. On the second Sunday of Lent, the gospel is about transfiguration. Well, white becomes a color that plays a huge role. White is the color of the resurrection. It's the color we'll use for vestments and altar cloths for the entire season of Easter, starting with the Easter vigil. Blue is probably the least evident color during Lent. However, blue is the color that's associated with water. And our holy water fonts have water to remind us of our baptism. On the third Sunday of Lent, the gospel used in parishes where people are preparing for entry into the church at the vigil mass tells of Jesus and the woman at the well. And to her, Jesus offers living water. Even though we don't use green vestments during, which are the vestments of ordinary time during Lent, the color green is not completely gone. There's green palms on Palm Sunday. The reading talks about the burning bush that Moses saw, and Moses was astonished because that green bush that was on fire did not char or change color. And on the fourth Sunday of Lent, we find ourselves with a color that's only used twice a year in the celebration of the liturgy, which is rose. Sometimes people call it pink, but it's rose. This is called Lateri Sunday. It's a point on the calendar that brings us halfway through Lent. Lateri comes from the Latin word meaning rejoice. And here, David is, during the readings, David is anointed as king. A blind man regains his sight. The Israelites celebrate their first Passover in the promised land. And the prodigal son returns home to the joy of the father. The fifth Sunday of Lent kind of seems a bit gray because of the readings speak of graves and bones and Ezekiel having a vision of the dead rising from graves. John tells us of the resurrection of Lazarus. They even told him, you know, that don't go in there because there's a stench in the tomb. So gray is another one that, you know, is prominent during this time. And that's pretty much, the most of it. Sometimes red you'll see because once the Lenten season is gone, you have red, which is the color of blood and the Lord's Passion. So the main color, that, of course, that's always associated with Lent is purple, but there are others.
Fascinating. It really is. But I'm running out of time. I got to wrap this show up.
Yeah.
Okay, I know you're going to be in studio next Saturday, so I look forward to that. Folks, you've been listening to the Catholic Cemeteries Association radio show. If you'd like more information on the Catholic Cemeteries Association, feel free to head on over to their website. It's CCACEM.org. And also, we have an email address. There's an email address for the Catholic Cemeteries Association, but there is one set up specifically for this show. If you have a question, maybe we can get his answered right here on these very airwaves as soon as next weekend. That'd be great. It's ccawdrc@gmail.com. And finally, we've got a toll-free number for the Catholic Cemeteries Association. It's 1-800-505-0050. I'll say it one more time, a little bit slowly. Write it down. 800-505-0050. For Chris Radlitz, Director of Family Services for the Catholic Cemeteries Association, I'm Gary Byron. Thank you so much for listening to the Catholic Cemeteries Association radio show. Until next Saturday, have a good one, everybody. So long.